Shalom and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast TV arm of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. Thank you very, very much for joining us. We appreciate it and your time. If you have any suggestions, by the way, or comments on the program or ideas for the show, please feel free to email me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And please do check out the website, jewishsacredaging.com, and the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. One of the, if not the most requested conversations that we're involved with Jewish Sacred Aging, and we talked about this before, is this issue of caregiving. It affects just about every person in our generation, and as you know, a family systems issue. So to help guide us through some of these issues, we are very, very pleased to welcome Linda Fodrini-Johnson, who is the author of this book, The Empowered Caregiver, subtitled Practical Advice and Emotional Support for Adult Children and Aging Parents. It's a lot. So, Linda, welcome. Welcome to Seekers of Meaning. Thank you very, very much for joining us. How are you doing today?
Fairly well. Thank you.
Good, good. Well, welcome. So, this book, The Empowered Caregiver. First of all, I got to start right away. What do you mean by empowered?
Often when an individual is caregiving, they feel lost and they don't know where they're going or what direction to go in. And I believe information and support give people the power to continue. So it invigorates and empowers people to continue being a family caregiver.
So the genesis for this book, as in many of the caregiving books, it's really personal. I imagine you just didn't wake up one day and say, "Well, I have nothing to do. I think I'll write a book about caregiving."
No.
What was the genesis of this book?
Well, I spent 40 years of my career helping caregivers, and I have a lot of information and a lot of wisdom. And as I reached retirement myself, I wondered who was going to carry that torch. I had trained a lot of staff, but I also had a lot of personal experiences as a family member, as a family caregiver, and as a professional in the field, running the first Alzheimer respite program in the San Francisco Bay Area, and care management, geriatric care management. So what was I going to do with that information? And that's why I decided to write the book. My business advisors, when I had my business, were telling me to do it for 10 years. So it was a passion of 10 years, finally put together after I retired, actually.
So so you're another member of who retires in order to really just work on some passion.
Yes.
Which is great.
You got it.
That's why I don't use the word retire. It's a dirty word.
No.
No, you're just transitioning to the next, yes, the next stage.
Exactly.
So you have done this professionally for decades. You've written the book. You've trained people. Here's one of the questions that always comes up in the workshops that we do and on caregiving from the Jewish perspective. How do you begin the conversation?
You begin the conversation without the word should, but I'm concerned with or about.
Okay.
And it could be me. I'm concerned about your weight loss. I'm concerned about your inability to sleep. I'm concerned about you overcaring for dad because I see you burning out. You say what you're concerned about and wait for the parent to respond.
As opposed to saying, this is what you should be doing now, right?
And you get resistance when you go that way.
Oh, in about, less than 30 seconds.
Yes. And often our parents see us as children, even though we might be a rabbi or a therapist or a doctor.
That doesn't make any difference. My mom, I lived in her 90s to her 90s. Trust me, I was still 12.
Yes, yes. You're stuck there.
No question about it.
But your wife could have better success with mom than you because your mother never knew her as a child.
Right. So you talk about in the book the idea, I think you call it the reluctant parent.
Yes.
Which so many of us have faced in a variety of, I always when we do these workshops, I always say, if you're really bored, if your life, you want some excitement, have the conversations about taking the keys away from the car keys. Hey, you won't be bored much longer.
No. That's one of the toughest things, especially with dads. Easier with moms than dads. So.
Yes. Because, we live in a car culture and you're out west, right? You're out in California?
I sure am. Yep.
So having lived there for a while, I know that you don't have a car in California. You might as well just, you're done. You're done.
Yeah.
What's the greatest challenge about being a caregiver?
It is continuing to respect the other as an adult, no matter what their deficits are. And that takes a little training sometimes, a little support, hearing other people's story. It doesn't come naturally. When you see somebody that is progressing in dementia, to talk about them in front of them, to talk to them as if they were a child, you have to simplify your conversation, but you have to remember that the person that you're talking to is still an adult, is still I want to go to the spiritual part, that essence, that soul is still there. It hasn't gone anywhere until that final breath. So getting that across. And when the adult children, because I've done so many support groups and I still do one or two, when they get that, it's an awe moment for them because they get a different response from their family member. It's a special, what I found, Rabbi, working with people with dementia, is I had to communicate with soul to soul and not cognition to cognition, the spirit of the person and not so much what they did or what they can do, but the essence of them.
It's interesting you mention that because I think it was last week, the podcast that we did was with my colleague, Rabbi Dale Friedman, whose entire rabbinate is dealing with this issue. And she was talking about getting, just as you say, getting off the intellectual and more on the heart.
Yes.
And the soul of that soul to soul. But I think, but the culture doesn't, really energize that, if that's the right word, or at least in many ways understand that.
Empower it. We could use that word.
Yeah. That's a good title for your book. what's the greatest reward of being a caregiver?
I think it's pure love. You probably have heard to love another is to see the face of God. So it's pure love. However, being a caregiver, you could get dragged into that looking for love that you might not have had as a child. So you can get dragged into overcaring. And that's why caregivers should be in support groups or getting some sort of counseling so they don't get sucked into a place where they become angry, resentful. If they're taking care of themselves, the caregiver, whether it's a spouse or an adult child, they're more able to be in that place of love when they're with the person they're caring for. Then they're doing it out of love and not just expectation.
One of the things that you talk about in the book is something that's coming up more and more in the work in some of our workshops, and I wanted to ask you to unpack it a little bit. And this is what we and others, not just other people in the literature, are calling the development of a family care plan. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the idea of consider a caregiver contract. So unpack that, because I know a lot of people say, well, I have an advance directive, I have a living will, I have a healthcare proxy, but that's at one stage of life. But as you know, and as you write about, there's a lot of stuff that's happening way, way, way before that. So what do you mean by the consider a caregiver contract?
Well, number one, you and I could write something now that says, if I need a caregiver, these are the things that are important to me. Or if I need to be in a facility, these are the things that are important to me. And whoever's making decisions for me, please make sure these are in my life. Spirituality, music, pets, nature, whatever it is that's important to you that gives you the essence of who you are, you want to keep in your life, even if you don't have the cognitive ability or physical ability. I still want to listen to classical music or whatever it is that gives your life meaning. So you're going to write a contract. It could be a contract that you're going to give to someone who's going to take care of you. But there's two kinds of contracts that I think I talk about in the book. And the other is if one of your family members, suppose you have four siblings or three siblings. I'm the oldest child of four. And you want to take care of mom. And that I had a full-time business at the time. My mom needed help. So I needed help from my three younger brothers. So we kind of wrote a contract. We didn't get it in writing, but it was a verbal contract of who was going to take care of each thing. Somebody's going to take care of, Craig was going to take care of mom's house. Gary was going to remind mom to take her medications every night. I was going to take her for medical appointments and take her on trips. And my younger brother was just to be, you know, phoning her from a distance and to socialize with her. So we all had our jobs. And we weren't doing hands-on caregiving. That becomes another issue when one of the siblings moves in. Maybe they're single, don't have any children, they're early retirement, and they can do it, but they want to get paid for it. So you have to write a contract and make sure that it's legal and that everybody's in agreement that that brother or sister is getting X number of dollars per hour and they're going to get time off from the other siblings, are going to give them respite 1 weekend a month or 1 week a month, whatever. So you're clear before there's a crisis, really eliminates a lot of family conflict.
Yeah, because if you lined up every clergy person, regardless of denomination, and asked them, have they ever experienced a situation with family conflict over decisions about caregiving for a loved one, I would bet you that 100% of them would say, of course, of course, because it comes up all the time. So the care plan basically saying this is how we're going to handle this. And it has to be revised because, as you alluded to, 5 years from now, the situations may change.
Exactly. And the options in the community might change.
Absolutely. But you also alluded to something else that we skip around sometimes, but is very, very powerful, especially in our society of mobility. Talk to me a little bit about the challenge of being a long-distance caregiver.
Well, it is a challenge, but as a geriatric care manager and a past president of the National Association of Care Managers, I know that families sometimes, I just had a family yesterday ask me for a resource in Georgia, and I couldn't find one within 100 miles. So, you know, it depends on where you live. You can find a geriatric care manager. Sometimes Jewish Family Services in my area have care managers because I've done some workshops for them. But so you find a geriatric care manager to be your in the area go to assess mom or dad. Where you hear on the telephone something that scares you, you don't get in on a jet and fly across the country to see that mom just has a cold. Or, you know, her next door neighbor moved and she wasn't able to articulate to you how lonely she is because she has no one to talk to every day. So she's calling you and sounding more and more stressed. So you have somebody to go assess the situation. And it can be a next door neighbor or friend, too. So you, depending on what the resources are in the community where your parent lives. But you don't want to fly across the country unless it's necessary. And again, it's your choice if that person says, you know what, I didn't like, this happened to me many times, I didn't like what I saw with your mom or dad, so I got them to see their doctor, and the doctor wants them hospitalized because their blood sugars are out of control, or whatever the issue was, but they got the help they needed, and then it's up to that child to say, well, I better come out there, that's more serious than what we thought. So, you know, and then without out of the area children, you want to have a current list of mom or dad's meds because you might be called by the ER to make a hard decision, and they're going to ask you some history. And also health history. All this is in the book too, Rabbi. You probably read it. All the information you need to keep on your parent, whether they're a mile away from you or across the country from you. Because if you're the decision maker, when you get the call from the ER, your emotions get in the way of practical thinking. You know, you're scared you're going to lose that parent. So it's really hard to come up with that information that, yeah, mom was hospitalized 2 years ago for the same thing that now she's in the hospital for. You can't remember when that happened or what hospital it was. So you want to keep a good journal of what's going on with your parent if they're from at a distance or even if they're close by.
It's I'm very happy you mentioned that because about a month ago we did actually March 1st, I think, a major podcast with a physician who's a medical director of a healthcare agency. And it was just on the medication and the interactions of medication and how a family needs to be careful about that. We can't stress this enough. And I'm glad you raised that. Really, the medication stuff is super, super important, especially long, distance. And the geriatric care manager, again, I'm happy you struck because more and more and more we're referring people to this growing profession. And I know a lot of elder care attorneys will have geriatric care managers because we work with one in South Jersey as part of their staff. So the elder care attorney is very, very important, is it not, to a family as they develop this?
Extremely important to help them have all the right documents and the right people to make decisions. But because of the cost of care, sometimes an elder law attorney can make sure that you're going to be eligible for government-sponsored care to pay for that care. And they can move monies around or make suggestions to you as a family, what you can do to get the government benefits. So not all families know where to research that. There's the VA benefits. There's so many different pots out there of monies to help pay for the care.
Right, because what we call the economics of aging, always maintain that for most of us, we're basically one medical crisis away from real financial burdens.
Yes.
And that's why the care plan is important. That's why, you know, we're doing this conversation about your book, The Empowered Caregiver. And again, we're speaking with the author, Linda Fodrini Johnson. You have this wonderful glossary at the end of the book with, you know, little snippets of information, resources, et cetera, et cetera. But in the beginning of the book, you talk about something that, again, is one of those, we don't talk about this. And that's this whole issue of elder abuse. And I'm fascinated with it. You put it right at the beginning. And I wanted to raise this with you because I was doing a workshop recently with a couple of people who also have specialists in this, an elder care attorney and somebody else. And they brought up this issue of human trafficking with older adults. Could you just talk about this chapter, and you have it right at the beginning, about why we need to be very, very cognizant of this whole elder abuse issue and how it impacts the empowered caregiver?
Well, I think that sometimes our older parents that are lonely, number one, make friends who aren't really friends. Right. They're people who want to take advantage of them. And I've had lots of experiences over my career of people being abused by hairdressers or a private duty caregiver with no supervision who weasels into their life and their monies and takes advantage of them. So I think that even though your parent might live in a lovely area and you think your parent is doing really well, all of a sudden, the parent doesn't want to talk to you as much as they wanted to, and you wonder what's happening. you need to be suspicious that another person might have, as I said, weaseled their way into their life by being a nice person, bringing them candy or chocolate or taking them for appointments or out to lunch. And it's inappropriate. There's the sweetheart scams with whether it's a woman or a man with an older person that happens often. There's more and more scams happening on the internet as well. That's a whole different kind of elder abuse. But there's elder abuse also that happens in families, Rabbi, and you probably know that too. It could be financial exploitation of the son or the daughter that's just hasn't made it, that's living off of mom or dad's Social Security and resources, inappropriately not taking care of the parent, but just using them. And the other children in the family don't know how to approach it or don't suspect it until something bigger happens and they find out that their brother or sister has gone through a couple $100,000, you know, and mom or dad doesn't really realize what's happening, and the other sibs don't. And so you get into big family conflict as well. And then elder abuse has to be reported. That probably is underreported in our country, especially in families, because our family doesn't do that. I actually had an experience of a brother who was addicted to pain medications, physically abusing my mom. And it was really hard to say, that doesn't happen in our family. That would never happen. But, you know, she was feeling sorry for him, let him live in her house. And he was addicted to pain medications and alcohol at the same time. Well, he got help, and we also charged him with elder abuse. And he had to stay away from her for quite a number of years. So it does happen in the best of families. And I that's why it's up front in my book. I think that too often we think it's not going to happen to our parent or to ourselves. And so we need to be aware of that and aware of where to find help, that in every county, in every state throughout our country, we have elder abuse reporting. It's mandated in some states. Not all states have the same set of laws. In California, it's pretty, there must be 10 different ways that you could be charged with elder abuse. You know, it's not just financial and physical. It could be emotional. It could be neglect. It could be self-neglect. So there's a lot of varieties of elder abuse. And that's why in hospitals, when you go into an emergency room, they always ask you, do you feel safe in your home? Or they should ask you that. They do in California anyway. And sometimes with medical appointments, if you've never seen a provider before, they'll ask you that question. Do you feel safe in your own home?
So I'm very glad that I wanted to raise this, because it's really, really important. Before we run out of time, there's one other question. Again, the book is called The Empowered Caregiver, Practical Advice and Emotional Support for Adult Children and Aging Parents. I imagine you get this at the usual places where you get your books, either bookstores or the great God Amazon. And,
that
delivers. Some of the things that we've been working on, and actually been in some conferences about this, on the caregiving issue, is this the rise of technology and robotics as caregivers in hospitals, in homes for long distance. Do you have any thoughts on the benefit of using technology as an assistant caregiver?
It's funny you asked me that, because two docs from Stanford and a tech guy called me probably 15 years ago, trying to do care management all electronically. And I said, that's never going to happen, because you're not going to see things or get things sent to you that a care manager or a religious person that comes to visit is going to see, somebody that sees with good eyes. Technology, I think, is great. I don't think it'll ever be the caregiver. I can't see the robots filling the place of a human being. But like I'm I live alone now. My husband died 2 years ago. And I don't think it's a bad idea for me to, and I haven't done it, to put sensors in my house, on my refrigerator, on my front door, on my bathroom. And that if my kids then get dinged every day, that I'm alive and I'm, you know, out and about. And if they don't get dinged and they don't know I'm traveling and then, you know, Costa Rica were all the places on my agenda to travel to this year, they know that something's up with mom. She hasn't gone into the refrigerator today. So there are some technology support systems. And in our community, we also have a nonprofit that trains volunteers to call seniors that really are isolated and alone every day. That's another way to check in on them. So there's lots of technology that's very useful. Our, you know, the little watches that we have are smart watches. I just fall to one side and it wants to send the ambulance to pick me up. So, you know, we have lots of good technology that's going to help us stay safe and stay alone. But to take over the care, I don't think that's going to happen. I really don't. I think it's a person-to-person necessary necessity, I think, of aging and growing older and growing more interdependent, that we have to depend on other people.
No, I wanted to raise this because we're seeing these robotic issues come to help, to actually help human beings to alleviate some of the stress and also to be, or like you were alluding to the sensors, an early warning system in sometimes, which is mm-hmm. So Linda, I want to thank you very much. Again, the book is The Empowered Caregiver, subtitled Practical Advice and Emotional Support for Adult Children and Aging Parents, available at the usual places where you get your usual books. Yeah. So Linda, thank you very, very much for joining us. Good luck. Good luck with your travels.
Thank you.
Good luck with the book, and I appreciate your time and your expertise. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Rabbi.
To all of you, thank you for joining us on today's edition of Secrets of Meaning, the podcast TV arm of Jewish Sacred Aging. Remember, if you'd like to connect with us, just email me, rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. If you'd like to make a tax-free donation to help support us, go to the website, jewishsacredaging.com. Click on the donate button, follow the prompts. And if you're a member of an organization or a synagogue or community, a company you'd like to sponsor these programs, just email me, rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. We'll take it from there. A reminder that Seekers of Meaning is produced at the Broadcast Center of Lubetkin Media in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And our expert producer, Steve Lubetkin, we thank very much. Again, thank you, all of you, for joining us. We appreciate your time. And until the next time you join us on the Seekers of Meaning podcast, take care of yourself, be kind to one another. Shalom.